The opinions expressed here on the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast are solely those of the presenters, not the opinions of Cedarbrook Community Church or Mountain View Community Church.
Hey guys, this is Brett Baronic from Sugar Grove Church in Goshen, Indiana, and you are listening to the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast with Steve Anderson and Matthew McCabe.
And we're back, Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast, episode 47.
Hey, I'm Steve Anderson.
And I'm Matthew McCabe.
We are here to help youth workers to keep going. We are not alone today.
We are not. We have brought in the big guns.
Yes, and actually, the last time we had two guests in our podcast studio, they were much better looking than the guests today.
100%.
Yeah. No question.
That was when our wives were here,
yeah.
FYI.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, today we have our senior pastors with us, which is an amazing thing. We have Guy Kneebone, senior pastor of Mountain View Community Church, and Paul Abbott, senior pastor of Cedarbrook Community Church. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
We're super glad you guys took the time to be with us today, and appreciate you giving up part of your day off.
I was thinking about this. It's pretty amazing the circumstances that exist on this show. Not only do we have two youth workers who have been in youth ministry for almost 30 years each, we've also been at our current churches for at least 15 years each, and we work with senior pastors, the same senior pastor, for that entire tenure, and those senior pastors are also the founding pastors of our churches. This is probably the only combination we could possibly find in the country.
No one else is doing this. This is the most exclusive podcast you will ever listen to.
It's pretty incredible. Right.
I remember, Paul, I talked you off the ledge when you wanted to get rid of Matthew a couple years ago.
Wait, I missed this memo.
There you go.
Why don't you guys tell us a little bit about how you came to start the churches that you now lead?
Wow. Cedarbrook started 30 years ago in about 2 weeks. And the short version of that is that I was working at another church in Down County, Montgomery County, and they had a handful of families that lived up north because that was where these people could afford to buy homes. Without giving anyone a black eye, I was pretty unhappy in the position I was in. And so I presented the idea to them that I took take this handful of families that were already traveling way too far to church and start a new church further up north in the upper end of Montgomery County. And they said, go for it. So we did. And that was about 30 years and 9 months ago. And so we started a new church in Gaithersburg.
And here we are.
Some great people.
That's wonderful.
Well, my story is not 30 years ago, about 21 years ago. I was an associate pastor in Iowa, and the senior pastor resigned and went to Florida. To make a long story short, I was interested in that position, did not get it, and then they brought in and hired a fellow who had retired and now brought him out of retirement. Wow. A good man, but I thought, I don't know if I'm going to be here 5 or 10 more years. And so I began to look at other ministries. Did not want to plant a church at that time. Had 5 girls at that time. thought, I don't want to go start from scratch. But no one else wanted me. So I kept coming in second. So one night my wife and I went to eat. And I said, I think we ought to plant a church. She said, okay. And so, just like that, she did all the research. And Steve, you know our story. And we contacted the Census Bureau. We found out population statistics for every area of the whole country. We didn't want to go west to Denver. We didn't want to go back to Dallas where I went to seminary. And one night we stumbled upon Frederick County, Maryland. Never heard of it. 16% population growth, 2.5 hours from where I went to college in Philadelphia at Temple University, and I said, that's where we're going to go. That's actually what happened. I made a contact with a person and drove out here a few months later, met 20 people I'd never met before, four couples threw their hat in the ring, and then the rest was history. And we moved
here.
Wow, that's very cool.
And still in the same position today.
Wow.
21 years later, 30 years later.
Yep.
51 years combined.
It's remarkable.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So tell us, retell the story, because obviously Matthew and I know, but how did you find us?
How did you find your glorious youth pastors?
How desperate were you at that time?
How we found Matthew is a choice story because of the guy before him. We fired the guy before him before he ever got here.
Really?
We had hired this young man from Alabama. He was going to come sometime in the fall. And a few weeks before his arrival date, we had a leadership weekend. And so we encouraged him to come on out for that leadership weekend, spend the weekend with us, get to know some folks. He did that while he was here. He met with the students, the high school students, on a Sunday night. And without going into the bloody details, he made such a mess of it that I fired him before he ever moved to us. And a few months later, we found Matthew. We had narrowed it down to 5, and then narrowed that 5 down to 2 that we brought here, and almost lost him because the one evening he spent without me there, my choice in who he spent it with was apparently unwise. Very unwise.
Thought about not taking the job based on that evening, but powered through.
But we sat at a table in a restaurant, and I said, I think this is what you're supposed to do. And I don't know if he believed me, but his wife did. And that was what?
It was almost 15 years ago now.
Oh, yeah, about 15 years ago.
We were in Oregon, and we came across the country. Now, I've gotten some of the backstory that Paul doesn't remember. When they narrowed it to 5 and then narrowed it to 2, I was number 3. So, Guy, I can relate. I was number 3. And when they called number 1 to set the weekend up, he said, I already took a job. So, basically, I got to go to the Olympics because someone pulled a hamstring, basically, is how that played out. Yeah. So, it worked out well for me. I'm glad that that person took another job.
So are we.
How did you hear about the position?
I found it online. Yeah, U Specialties Job Bank.
Okay.
Yep. It's a beautiful thing.
It is.
Well, Steve, we had our first hire, we decided wanted to be a youth pastor.
Yes.
So we had been a church now maybe a year and a half old. Okay. I planted the church. I was the secretary of the church. I was the senior pastor. I preached every Sunday. I was a youth pastor. I took the youth group from like a dozen youth down to 2.
After good about work. A year and a half. Yeah. Good work.
So I knew we needed a youth pastor, okay?
Yes.
We formed a search committee. We did a national search. We contacted seminaries. I don't know who else we contacted. We had 2 candidates we brought in, and actually both of them, I think, did turn us down. One guy, we were sort of happy he turned us down. So, but after a whole year of looking...
Oh my.
A whole year of looking for a youth pastor. I got the mail one day, and the church office was at my house, so all the correspondence came to my house. And I remember praying that day, Lord, give us somebody. I opened up the mail, and Steve's letter and his resume is in the mail.
Give us anybody.
Anybody at that stage of the game.
So I went up to the church office, which was in my house, in a bedroom.
Yep.
And I called Steve, and Karen, his wife, answered. I think Steve was at a night class at Denver Seminary.
And I was actually a youth group.
We were a youth group. Mm-hmm. So Karen and I talked. She was super friendly. She really helped you get the job. And we talked a lot about it. And, you know, the thing about that was my last name is Kneebone. I think she couldn't believe my last name was Kneebone. That's the first thing she said to Steve. Some guy named Kneebone called. And Steve actually then got back with us after all. And so... you didn't have a whole lot of competition at that point. I want you to know that. We might have said you did, but we didn't. It is so hard to find a great youth pastor. We spent a whole year. One of our candidates we were pretty high on, until we said, we want to contact your references. And we asked, how did you find this person, a reference? And he said, well, I met her online. He'd never actually met her, but she was on his resume as one of his references, although he never met this person. So I thought, that's what you're dealing with sometimes. Wow. When you're looking, we had quite a big laugh about that.
Yeah.
But so Steve, that's how we found Steve, and Steve got back, and we interviewed him, and the rest was history.
Yeah. Well, you two should know that it's gotten better in the last 15 years. I mean, those were the dark days of youth ministry where it was hard to find one. There's some great youth pastors out there now. I mean, not as good as us, so don't get any ideas.
Right.
But there are some good people out there.
Did either of you have any youth ministry experience before you became lead pastor?
I did college ministry for 4 years.
Yes.
But not high school ministry.
Yeah, I planted two different churches, one on the University of Kansas campus and one University of Illinois. I was in both those places for about 6 years.
Okay.
So I had, a good dozen years working with college students, but that's not the same.
It's very different.
Working with college students in the 70s and working with high school students in the 20 teens, two completely different kettles of fish. Yeah. Completely different.
When you were searching, what were you looking for? I mean, you were just looking for anybody at that point in time. But clearly you had some other agendas.
I think one thing we did say, that I'm not sure others look, but we raised the bar from the beginning. We did want someone with a seminary degree. So we didn't want a youth worker. We didn't want a youth director. We were looking for a youth pastor. Right. Maybe that made it a little harder. He didn't have to have a four-year, but a three-year degree, at least a 2 to 3-year degree, someone we felt could come in and knew the Bible and theology as well as the senior pastor and could actually teach and still have the passion for youth and that gift mix. And that's what we were looking for.
That's a tough find.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
We found it was.
You found a good one.
Yeah. So what were we looking for? Wow. Matthew was actually, he followed a guy who'd been with us for 6 years. Wow. We were clearly looking for someone with experience, mm-hmm. Which would play a little bit into what you're saying, Guy. We didn't want somebody who was green, who we would have to train. I guess the bottom line is, in any hiring decision, my approach has always been find good people who know what they're doing and then turn them loose. I'm hiring this guy because I don't know how to do student ministry.
Right.
And I'm hiring the next guy because I don't know how to do children's ministry or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wanted somebody that had a strong sense of calling, that we felt like there was a connection, that had experience. Obviously, by the time you sit down with them face to face, it's very subjective whether or not this is a good fit.
Mm-hmm. And with us, one thing we were looking for, we did want someone who could preach.
Yes.
Because I had done the lion's share of the preaching. By the time Steve came, I probably did 100 out of 104 sermons,
Oh, wow.
I preached 50 times a year for the first 2.5 years trying to plant a church. And so some of them weren't all that great, some of them were okay, but you do that much and you're just starting to burn out.
You burn out.
And so we
the
wanted
first
someone.
One was fantastic.
Yeah,
I'm
the first.
Sure.
So we wanted someone who maybe half a dozen times a year could fill the pulpit, and Steve had that gift mix, and that was a perfect situation for us.
And Matthew can actually do that, but I also had someone else who could do that.
Okay.
And so that was not a big criteria at the time.
Mm-hmm.
We just needed a guy who had experience that was believable.
And we needed someone who wanted to start something from scratch. Because even though the church was 2 to 2.5 years old when Steve came, we didn't have a whole lot. We had a Sunday school class, which was small.
Right.
And we had some good workers, but we didn't really have a leader. We really needed someone who could say, okay, there's never been a youth ministry at this church in the history of the church. I'm willing to take it from ground zero and build it.
How big was the group when you came?
Probably on a Sunday night, averaging about 25 or 30 kids.
High school
and middle school together.
High school and middle school together.
What would you tell a young youth worker now if they were looking for a position? What should they look for? What kind of questions would they come across if they were at your church applying for our jobs?
Wait, don't give them any ideas, Steve.
For a job.
I would add, Paul, you have probably a lot of words of wisdom. I'd add, how do you get along with parents? because we're hiring you to be the youth pastor, but you'll find out quickly that the parents will have a lot of input for you.
And that's a very kind way to put it. So
what episode was that?
Yeah, we have an episode about that.
How do you get along with parents? How do you communicate with parents? Can you get them on your team? Because you got to get them on your team too.
Yes, absolutely.
You're discipling their kids, but if you can't get them on your team, you know, I mean, they're the ones that are going to drive their kids to your ministry to begin with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a pretty big thing.
If they're really young, one thing they need to know when they actually show up, when they get a job, is work ethic is huge, because where they're coming from, it depends on how young is. Our experience with people who this is their first real job, that's a huge adjustment. And it's a shock to the system. We have to go to work again tomorrow? and there's no recess? You know, we have to stay for 8 whole hours?
Yeah. You mean I don't just do this on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays?
Yes, exactly. That's been a battle.
Or a Tuesday and Thursday hour and a half class?
Yeah.
You can blunder big time, but if I know you're working hard, then the blunders are manageable. Mm-hmm. If I think, you're just half-hearted at what you're doing here, then at least from where I sit, we're going to be a lot less forgiving. You know, you got to show up and at least try to do the job. And I think people right out of school in their first position, they struggle with that. That's mm-hmm. a transition.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think I'd add patience and perseverance. And Steve actually preached in church yesterday for us. Kids can go on a retreat, get sky high for the Lord. It doesn't take long. It could be the very next day at school. And now they're back, you know, where they are.
Yes.
Struggling. Did what I experienced at the weekend, was that real? You know, doubts creep in, I think, quickly for kids.
Yep.
You know, am I a Christian? Am I not? You know, am I pleasing God? Am I not? I messed up. You know, whatever it is, I think, you know, you can baptize a kid on August 31st and then September 1st, they're not coming to youth group. It's like, how did that happen?
That has happened.
Yeah.
And so,
or
if
send
you don't,
him off on a retreat and he'll come to Jesus again.
Yeah.
Again.
So how you have to have a lot of perseverance, because they're going to be up and down.
That's a good word for this podcast.
Yeah, no kidding. Perseverance.
What this is about.
So from your chair, the senior pastor chair, what are you looking for from your youth pastor in terms of relationship, in terms of communication, in terms of just how they interact within the system of the church that you're in charge of?
I'll let Paul go.
I mean, this is a truism or a cliche, but he has to be a team player. He has to be engaged in a staff meeting context. He has to be engaged, but he also has to be content with the fact that he's almost certainly the least influential person at the table, just by virtue of being new and probably younger than some of the people at the table, maybe a lot of the people at the table. I mean, you know, Matthew, we've had conversations with people we go to work with every day where the concern is, I just wish I had a bigger voice. And my response to that is, dude, you're at the table. You're in a church of 1,500 people, and six of them are at the table. You're one of the six. You have a voice. Relax and use it. The fact that somebody who's been in ministry longer than you've been alive is a little more influential than you are, well, yeah, that's going to happen, you know. So they have to be engaged. They have to make peace with the fact that they're going to listen a lot. And I think that's probably harder to stay engaged when you aren't one of the decision makers at the table, you know.
You know, there's probably a lot of former youth workers who are former youth workers because of their relationship with their senior pastor.
Wow.
For whatever reason.
Yeah. We've heard horror stories.
Yeah,
yeah.
There's lots of stories,
sure.
You know. And so this topic of relationship between youth pastor and senior pastor is something that people are really going to be interested to hear. So I'm just curious, you know, personally, like what kinds of things do you want the youth pastor to give to you that help you feel secure about that big piece of the church?
Anytime there's a problem, he needs to tell me right away. He needs to make sure I hear it from him, not somebody else.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I think I was going to, and adding to the question earlier, I think I read a book before I came here and started the church called The Top 10 Mistakes Leaders Make by Hans Finzel, I think is his name. Have you guys read that book? I'm rereading it now. Steve, you may remember. We actually went through it as a staff.
We'll put it in the show notes.
And one of the chapters is Make Room for Mavericks. Steve is a little bit of a maverick. I hope you don't mind me saying that. Steve likes to do what he likes to do, okay? And we complement each other well because I think a lot of his strengths are my weaknesses and maybe vice versa. Okay. But if I don't make room for a maverick, then the church is going to suffer. My word advice to the maverick is don't be in a silo. Don't do everything in a silo because, yeah, we want you to go off and run your program, but we need to still know what you're doing. You know, so that person who's a maverick needs to, like you said, team player, has to be a team. You can be as much a maverick as you want, just still be a team player.
Yes.
And I think that's a character thing. The person who doesn't have the, who is a maverick but doesn't have the character won't be the team player, and then he's in trouble with the senior pastor.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's a good word.
More communication is probably always better than less.
Yeah, I remember a conversation we had shortly after I came when you talked about that. Look, if there's a problem, I need to know about it. Not from a, I want to fix it, because if I know how to fix it, I'd be doing your job. That's why I hired you. But because, like,
or scold you.
Right, exactly. It's not that either. It's that there was an instance right before I came where there was an issue in the youth ministry, and the youth pastor sort of just dealt with it themselves, kept it to themselves. But it involved friends of yours, parents of these kids were actual friends. And, of course, these friends are now hanging out there going, where's my pastor when I need him? Because my kids are in trouble and I'm in trouble with the youth pastor. And truth is, he didn't know because there was no communication. And so it's just, you got to let him know.
I'm missing in action because I don't know what's happening.
Right. So it was that, like, If you're gonna err one side, err towards telling me too much. And if I don't need to know, I'll be like, that's enough of that story. You can go now. You know. So, yeah, over communicate.
I think the senior pastor can't be threatened by the youth pastor.
No,
because that's a problem. I think half of the problems prior with the senior pastor. The youth pastor gets up to preach. Everybody's like, wasn't that awesome? You're glad it was awesome. Then you're like, do they still need me?
Yeah.
You know.
He was great. No, my son also has some experience as a youth pastor. So I see this from that side of the equation. And in the first position he was in, he was the only other employee besides the solo, now senior pastor. And what struck me again and again and again is that this guy needed to protect him from some of the other people in the church, you know, the influential people or the board or whatever. He needed to protect this guy who's just getting a start in ministry from some of these people who are being cantankerous. They might even be right, but you don't let them beat up on this person who's just getting his start in ministry, because too much of that, he'll throw in the towel. He'll decide, I'm going to go work at Lowe's or, you know, get a degree in counseling or whatever it might be. And I just don't think it occurred to him that that was his job. He expected this fellow pastor to be a peer, to be able to stand on his own two feet and do what he was able to do, when really he's just a kid trying to figure out what this is about. You know, the guy needed to protect him. And it you know, I think you're absolutely right. Not be threatened that when this guy delivers a sermon, you know, it's a home run because the bar was so low. You know? He's the youth guy.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
It's going to be awful. It wasn't awful. It was a home run, you know. Not be threatened by that.
Yeah, I think there is a tendency to see the youth ministry almost in competition with the church sometimes. And that leads into all kinds of problems, interpersonal and otherwise, because, I don't know, just a sense of, a sense of competition, a sense of threatening. That's just not healthy for anyone.
You know, it takes huge resources, takes a lot of time. There's always something to announce that takes time.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
And it's often the source of problems. You know, we which is...
Matt, are you sure you're okay? I'm good here. No, it's good.
I've always said that's one reason you need a student ministry, so that when bad things happen, you have someone to blame.
Ah, boy, I wish I'd known this 15 years ago.
No, we came to church one Sunday morning, and there was a person-sized hole in the wall of the auditorium.
That was on me. That one's on me.
From a student ministry event the night before, you know. And, it's the kind of, if something's broken, it's probably the youth ministry.
Didn't exactly match your body?
Not mine. Okay. It wasn't me. It was a middle school student, rather large middle school student.
A young man who's now in the Marine Corps.
Now in the Marine Corps, yep.
Was he thrown through that wall in anger, or was that an accident?
No, he ran through the wall on his own accord in a game that we were playing. Okay. That got a little too competitive. Yeah, that's why it's on me. It's on me.
He's the same student who fell through a ceiling.
He fell through a ceiling. Different event, but... Huh. Same kid.
Where he wasn't supposed to go and fell through a drop ceiling.
A drop ceiling.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Student ministry at its best. But that kind of leads us into, so what do you think is a really healthy relationship between the youth ministry and the big church ministry? You know, how do they coexist well together? What are the key elements to that? So it's not a silo, and it's not competition, and it's not just who broke that. It's healthy.
Yeah. That's a great question. Well, for us, Steve, you mentioned being at the table. So Steve's mm-hmm. one of our executive staff members. He was the second pastor on the staff.
Right.
So he's always been, at the table.
Yeah, one year we had three elders, me, you, and one other
and
elder.
Steve was an elder for 3 years. Yeah. Yes. So I think, letting the youth pastor preach is important. How often is up to the context and the gifting of the youth pastor? You know, when we have missions trips, we give a whole service in the summer to the summer missions trips, and the youth get up to share, Steve gets to speak. Right. It's highlighted. They don't need to hear me preach that day.
Right.
There's no need for me to be there.
Exactly.
There's no need for me to be through the five-minute close. I'll let Steve do the five-minute close. It's his service. So I think that's one area.
Mm-hmm.
And just budget. I think if you don't give the money to, if you hire this person, say, go do it, and then we say, well, we don't have the money for that because that's going to something for the adults. That's not good.
Yeah.
Amen to that.
Amen. Preach, guy, preach.
Yeah. That budget, it needs to be bigger.
Put your money where your mouth is. Yes.
So you're thinking, how do you keep it not a problem and not a silo, but just integrated?
Just integrated and together, yeah. What have you found are some keys to doing that?
I mean, you tell me, seriously, because to me, in the way we operate, that's not a question.
Yeah, it really isn't. You're
so
right.
So why is that?
I think it's because the student ministry at our church gets as much, recognition's the wrong word, but just as much stage time as any other ministry would get, even more. I mean, at our church, we have two Sundays a year. We have this Sunday in the summer where we honor our high school seniors, and then we have a Sunday in early January where the student ministry just gets to take the whole service over, and students teach and lead worship and do everything. And so the student ministry is incredibly visible. And so it's also
woven into a lot of other things mm-hmm. that we do in some way. So the students are often a source of manpower
mm-hmm.
for things that we do. It's not...
They manage one of our missions partners.
Yeah, so we have four missions partners. One is primarily a student ministry gig.
So they kind of feel like they're at the
at
the big table,
you know? It's not any more isolated than any other ministry, and every ministry is isolated in the sense that it's its thing, not some other thing,
But did you intend to build that into it when you began the church? Did you envision it being that way?
I think it just happened. It just happened.
Okay.
I don't think we ever imagined it to be any other way. Part of it may go back to, and I know this is probably isn't what you guys are trying to get to, but part of it may go back to how we handle staff in general, in the sense that it's a very collegial thing. Mm-hmm. And in any church our size or your size, there are a host of tasks that are really nobody's job.
Right.
You don't have a pastor or an admin for that task. And so at our table, it's who has the skills and the tools to do that. So if you're going to edit a document, it's going to be the children's pastor, because he happens to be good at that. Not because the children's ministry has anything to do with editing the Lenten devotional, you know, but this guy can do that. So that's his job. And that tends to then integrate things. So
aren't you the tech guy?
I am the tech guy. Yes. Yeah.
Everybody has a stake in this event because they helped plan it.
Yep.
And in varying degrees, they are involved in some way.
Yeah. If somebody's printer's not working, I'm the one getting the call.
Which is really bad news for the youth pastor.
Yeah. I think I'm usually the voice of maybe there's a more creative way to do that thing.
Sure.
Something
absolutely
different. But I think one of the things that's the biggest blessing about being in Mountain View is from the very beginning, youth ministry was an emphasis.
Right.
Maybe
absolutely.
It was because you had five children.
Yeah, I did.
Girls.
Yeah.
Or
see,
the fact
six,
we were in a public
so
high school.
Maybe that comes into play.
Yeah. But right from the beginning, I think youth ministry was in large part driving a lot of what happened at this church. And that showed up in the budget. It showed up in the hiring. And it's made for a healthy relationship.
The other thing that comes into play there, I know for us, is when we listen to new people and why they stuck around, why they came,
right,
why they stuck around. The two most common answers are children's ministry and student ministry. And you hear, no matter
here
what,
it's usually the preaching.
No, is that right? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. It hasn't been the preaching at our place for 20 years.
Just kidding.
Seriously, it's the children's ministry and the student ministry. You hear that enough times, it doesn't matter what your job is. You're a fan of children's ministry and the student ministry because that's how we roll. That's what feeds this.
And when we built this church facility, we only have one adult classroom in the whole building.
Yeah.
So we have way more square footage for children and youth because
exactly.
Our vision is the next generation. Most of what the adults do is in homes still today, rather than having a bunch of classrooms, because we'd rather have a great youth center than a bunch of great adult classrooms.
Yeah, absolutely.
So where was that space when I came to the church, Paul?
Well, it didn't exist.
It didn't exist, but it exists now. We knocked some walls down, made it happen.
We spent about $400,000.
Yeah, we did.
Squeezed the offices into this corner and made that space.
Yeah.
Stole all the patents from Mountain View.
From Mountain View, yeah, 100%. Almost named it the Deeper Pit.
Should have.
Now, this will be a challenging question for you guys, given the fact that you've worked for so long with two stellar individuals like Steve and myself. But what do you think most youth pastors fail to understand about the church at large? Like if there's a disconnect from the youth ministry staff where they're just not quite connecting with, you know, this is how things work in the church, where are they missing the boat?
One example of that would be that person that you just made angry, or you were dismissive in some way, covering your paycheck.
It's like having grace for people's.
So you know, some of the old guard in the church that seems, maybe if I'm doing student ministry and I'm the youth guy, they're out of touch. They don't get it. They're not with it. And you don't realize these are the people who built this place, who drove a car with 300,000 miles so we could raise the money to build that room that you work in. And he's a little rough around the edges now, but wow, he bled and sweat and wept so you could have the privilege of doing what you do. So cut him a little slack.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I would probably say something similar. Older adults, I'm starting to move to that direction now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm not as old as you, Paul.
I can't
but
tell.
I'm assuming youth ministry, that goes back to the silo thing. I just don't know, even though I've got millennials who are children millennials, I'm probably not that great at reaching millennials.
Yeah.
Our youth ministry is all over that, but that doesn't mean the rest of us don't know a thing or two.
Yes.
So there are still some things that work that those of us who are 58 or 60 or 65, or in your case, you know, I don't know, you know, still
work. Oh, did you see that?
Now you're going to put a number on it. Now you're going to put a number on it.
65, and then he said, I don't know.
You know, teaching the Bible still works. That's still important. You know, maybe we're using our phones. We're not using, you know, Bibles where you love to hear the pages flip through. But if our kids aren't hearing the Bible taught, maybe they're getting all the great other things. You can't get away from that. And so those of us who are older, like, come back. Hey, where's the Bible? You know, where's the gospel? Let's just make sure that's still there. Yeah, the substance has to still be there.
You have to respect your elders. I mean, that's, you know, you have to respect what came before you, because that actually is what allows you to do what you do.
I want to turn the tables on Matthew for a second.
Yeah.
What would you say to young youth workers about how they relate to their senior pastor?
As I've been meeting a lot of younger youth pastors over the last couple of years, there's almost an assumption of a conflict with the senior pastor, because there's all these stories of these horror stories of youth pastors and senior pastors conflicting. And I just think, like, you have to go into it believing that the relationship will be great, and then you do your part to make the relationship great, and everything, chances are, it's going to be great. But I think I see too many sort of start from a negative position, like, this guy doesn't understand me, and I'm not getting enough announcements for my stuff. This person doesn't think my stuff's important, you know. And I just think if we go in with that attitude, I think then it's going to be rough, and we're going to be one of those stories. But if we go in saying, all right, let's make sure this works, because if this works, I could be here a long time, and I could make some serious hay here if this goes well. If this doesn't go well, I'm going to be working at Carrabba's. I mean, that's just the way it's going to be, you know?
Well, I would add, like, I guess for me, if I'm going to present something to the elders or the church at large, here's the vision. And if Steve has already been in on that during the give me your input time, if Steve then says, Guy, I'm with you. But then when I go to bring it public, now suddenly Steve's like, I don't know if I'm with you on that. That's going to be not a very good situation.
That's going to be a problem.
I hope that's not from experience.
No, that's from a previous church's experience where that senior pastor, youth pastor, never got along after that. Yeah. You know, and I remember him coming to the meeting. Hey, listen, when I go to the elders, if you're not with me, tell me now. Mm-hmm. Don't change your tune when we get to the elder board. And that they never got over it.
Yeah, I think that's a good word. And I think I've tried really hard to do everything I can to support you publicly, back to the youth leaders, back to families, kids. Like, I think they need to see me in support of the church and in support of you. I think that's really important. I'm not sure that that always happens in churches. I think there's a tendency for the youth pastor to feel like he's kind of got the ear of certain people, and he can gossip a little over here on the side, That's not beneficial at all.
Not healthy at all.
Yeah. So there was a time, Guy might remember, probably year 6, 8, where I was a little bit of a little too much on the Maverick side, maybe, and was kind of corrected in that. And I hope that since then I've been more along the lines of, I need to do everything I can to
make
Guy look good. Because that's good for me, it's good for the church, and it's just being a good person.
Yeah. So, just on an interpersonal relationship. Sure. I mean, we've got to support the senior pastor, because so the senior pastor goes, so the church goes. I mean,
absolutely.
There's just, on the flip side, he has to support. He has to have 100%, your back.
100%. Yeah.
Right. We're in a stewardship campaign right now, and I've got a series of 5 sermons, and Steve's all on board, but I'm giving him one of those. Mm-hmm. If he can't get up and preach a sermon about the campaign, then it almost seems like, well, big church doesn't matter to the youth ministry.
Yes,
so he needs to help be a vision carrier to the adults.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that'll carry over to the youth as well.
Right.
But if I don't ever give him that room to do it,
right,
then it might cause someone to chafe unnecessarily because I'm not giving him any leadership.
Mm-hmm. One of the main thrusts of our show is this idea of longevity, like helping youth workers to stick around for a long time, stay in the game. What do you guys think are some of the unique blessings that you've experienced as a result of the fact that
we've just kind of stuck around. We've been around for a long time. You can't remember life before us, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Maybe you wish you could.
Oh, I think for us, part of it was we didn't set the bar low. We didn't decide we'll hire any 22-year-old kid right out of Bible college, wet behind the ears, has no experience because they have an extroverted personality. You know, I'm not saying that's wrong, you know, but we were looking for someone with some, you know, experience and training, and we thought who fit the DNA of the church.
Yes.
So I don't know if we had it spelled out yet, but we were looking for someone who could fit the DNA of the church. And there's just some people that could be great at another church, but just don't fit you. And so you have to be wise enough to see that. I think Steve has lasted 18 years. I don't know if lasted is the right word. Sorry. But I think maybe he would feel like, if I wasn't a youth pastor, I maybe would go to this church anyway. And I think that's what you need for longevity.
And maybe this is a chance to speak to any senior pastors who might hear this and have a vision for, what if we had someone who was in this position for a long time?
Over time, it just gets better and better and better. Communication gets easier. Relationships go deeper. Ability to count on that guy in a pinch, in a tough situation, becomes a more natural and an easier thing to do because you've weathered this storm and this storm together, so you know you can take him into this storm and depend on him and you're going to be okay. And he knows the same toward you. There's always the element of the relationship that I'm the boss and he's not. You can't escape that, but that is almost not there, would you say?
I would absolutely agree with that.
It's almost not there, you know, so that if I'm going to go to dinner with somebody just for grins, hey, let's call Matthew and Gina. Why not? I don't think you get that after
2 years.
You get that after a year or two with somebody.
10 or 12 years, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I've watched his kids grow up. Mm-hmm. I love his kids. I'm not sure what they think of me.
They think
we seem to get along.
They call you people.
Yeah, they have a name for me. And before we started Cedar Brook, I started these two different churches. I was in each one for about 6 years, and it was student ministry, so it was by nature kind of a transient sort of thing. But what I figured out in the process of that is the way to make a real difference is stay in one place for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And so when I started this church, I knew this is the last place I'll ever be, you know, because that's how you actually make a big impact, I think. Mm. And I don't know why that wouldn't be true for somebody in student ministry as well, or small group ministry.
We certainly think that's the case.
Or children's ministry.
We'll amen that.
I would think a key to longevity is calling.
Yes,
if Steve had thought, I'll be a youth pastor for 5 years, but really what I want to do is preach, you know, then it's only going to be 5 years.
Yeah.
So calling, I think, is really significant.
Absolutely.
And not viewing youth ministry as a lesser calling than the discipleship pastor or with the senior pastor. It's a calling.
Yes.
You know, and so why not stay longer at a place? Mm-hmm. And don't take the first job because you have to take it. You have to make a decision out of strength, not out of weakness. Mm-hmm. And take the position that fits your gift mix and you feel like you fit with the DNA of that church and the working relationship with the senior pastor, and it could last 10 plus years. For us, 15, 18 with these two guys. So,
No, but that's really good advice, Guy, that you just gave, that whole idea of don't take a job if you don't think you can stay at that job for 20 years. I mean, at that point in time, that might not be the job for you to take just because they're offering it to you, unless you think my gifting, my relationship, this church feels like a place I could be for 20 years. Maybe don't take it because you want to set yourself up for longevity.
Well, the great thing about having a long-term relationship with the same senior pastor is you are then kind of reevaluated as you go and given more responsibility or changing responsibilities as your calling changes or your gifts expand. And so you don't feel stifled because you've got that relationship you've built over time, and opportunities are given to you.
Yeah, I don't know, Steve, if you all of a sudden up and moved and went to another church at your stage of your career, would that senior pastor give you what you're getting here? I don't know.
Exactly.
Maybe.
No, probably not.
You know, you're like, no, okay, you get two sermons, and then if you prove yourself, you might get a third in 3 years, you know?
Yeah.
And you might get 3 weeks vacation if you're lucky. But now you have
ten weeks.
That's right,
10 weeks.
I think you've got some perks that maybe the average youth pastor isn't getting.
Right.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Oh, my perks are out of this world.
Same here. Yeah. We're very blessed. Yeah. How often do you guys actually think about the youth ministry?
Certainly when people run through walls.
You know, the first thing we do in a staff meeting every week is we debrief the last weekend. And a big part of that conversation will be, what happened in the middle school thing? What happened in the high school thing? What happened in the children's thing? Hmm. Somebody taught an adult class. How'd that go? Those things will get much more conversation than the actual adult worship service. So in that sense, we're thinking about it all the time.
That's encouraging to hear from
you. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, Guy, you still have a son in the youth ministry.
Right, right. And I picked him up and drove him home last night. And I didn't know Danny was speaking until I said, how did was Steve's message? He said, well, Steve didn't speak. He was our middle school director, Danny Jackson, who we got stole from you guys.
I know.
We're thankful you have a nepotism policy like we have a nepotism policy. For all those people listening, the last thing you want is your son to be succeeding the father as the senior pastor.
Amen.
Of the church. We don't need to go there, but that's just totally dumb, okay? So we think about it a lot. It needs to be thought about a lot. Yeah. And at the same time, I don't know if I think about it as much as I did before we hired Steve, because it was like, okay, what do I do now? That Sunday school teacher crashed and burned.
Yes.
You know, the kids didn't like him. The parents didn't like him. We need to find somebody to lead this ministry.
Yeah.
So then once you hired him, then you don't think about it very much because you think
not as much.
He's thinking about it.
And in a way, I think that's good. You know, you think about where the problems are and you think about what your job is. And to the degree your job is to manage or oversee, then you want to stay in touch. But, I mean, one way to answer that is I think about student ministry as much or more than I think about the small group ministry or the adult ed ministry or the ESOL ministry or the missions element of the church. I probably think about it more than I think about a lot of those things.
I think I spoke to Steve recently about it. So I'm a little bit at the point now where, and I feel like I need to be a little bit more involved with the youth ministry. It could be a small bit, but just so I feel more connected. They graduate fast. So how now as they graduate to adult world, for lack of a better term, if I didn't have a relationship with them when they were in 7th through 12th grade, I may not have a relationship with them when they're in their 19 and 20, 21 and 23. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important.
Probably once or twice a year, I wander, if I'm not speaking on a Sunday, I'll wander into the middle school program because they meet during a Sunday morning service. And, you know, I don't want to sit through the service twice anyway, and so I'll go just sit in the back and see what's going on. I usually try to let them know ahead of time I'm coming so that I don't unnerve somebody. But watching that, I would never teach in the middle school ministry because I couldn't do it. I just flat could not do what they do. There is such a multitasking element to talking to, you know, sixth grade boys at the same time that you're carrying a completely different train of thought here that has to do with your message. Sit down over there and you're talking about Moses or whatever. Mm-hmm. I couldn't do that.
Did you guys think we'd still be around this late in the game? It's a loaded question, right?
No, that's a great question.
I don't know if I knew I'd be around this long. It's 21 years for me.
It's a fair question.
I remember mowing my yard one day 3 years in, I said, Lord, I'm going to try to make it 10 years. It was one of those days.
What do you think would happen at 10 years?
I'd probably, you know, I don't know what would
You'd
happen.
You'd write a book.
I'd be working at Roy Wright. Yeah,
consulting.
I'd write a book and have a podcast or something like that, you know. So, because ministry's hard, you know. I mean, there's times I'm like, I can see myself here 30 years. Then you're like, if I can make it through this year.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Sure. I think I always thought I'd be here 20 years, but not sure.
Yeah.
You know, at least 10. So I don't know what you thought, Steve, but So to be 21 and 18, if you said you'd be here at 21 and 18, I'd say, yeah, maybe.
Wow. Do you remember what you asked me at the interview?
I don't think so.
You said, how long can you commit to being here? Or something like that.
Okay, I think I do remember
and
that.
And I said, I'll be here at least 5 years, I think I said. You just wanted to know I wasn't jumping from stone to stone on my way to something else.
Yes. Yeah, and that, and we've always asked that same thing. But I think with Matthew, I just assumed that he would just be here for a long time.
Okay.
In part because that had kind of been our experience up to that point. The fellow that he replaced after 6 years in student ministry came to me and just said, you know, I don't think I can keep doing this anymore. He ended up leaving ministry. But my first response to that was to see, could we craft a different position for him in the church that would allow him to stay in ministry and stay with us? Because I liked the guy, you know. I genuinely liked him and cared what happened. Well, then as I understood more why he thought he couldn't keep doing this, I agreed with him. You need to bow out of ministry.
I think once Steve came on staff and been here a couple, 3 years, then I thought he's going to be here a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, in the initial interview, you know.
Who knows?
You don't know. You don't know.
No, no.
But after a couple, 3 years, it's like, you know what?
Yeah.
Steve, when did you know? How soon in did you know? Yeah, unless something goes really sideways. Yeah. I'm here for the long haul.
I don't know if I ever really had that moment. I just I knew I was.
He just kept showing up. Here. He just kept showing up.
Here I am. They let me back in the doors today. So, yeah, I knew I wanted to be in youth ministry, and that's what my calling was. So, being in a healthy place where you're well supported, there's just no replacing that. I mean,
so let me ask you guys a question. If you've been doing the same thing the same way for 5-10 years, are you open to changing your program, how you do it? Or are you like, I'm only going to change it if it's totally broken, even if it's not as good as it, you know what I'm saying? How do you guys view that?
I think the question that I had to ask myself was, when we were growing and adding staff, was I willing to bring in people who were going to speak differently than I think? One of the staff we hired is a former student who grew up in this youth ministry, so she thinks differently than me. She's a woman, obviously, but she also only knows this.
Yeah.
So bringing in Danny was good because he was from outside the church. He has a different perspective.
Yep.
And I want him to tell me the things that he sees that we should be we should be doing differently. I hope I'm open to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, every time we bring somebody in new, it's, well, you know what, the last place we did this, and even though the guy is younger than some of my grandchildren, you just think, interesting.
Yeah.
You should think about that.
Yeah.
And I like that. You know, I encourage new people. I say, you know, you're gonna see us do some things that strike you as, that's stupid. Why do they do it that way?
You should say that. You should say that.
Yeah.
Because we probably, we never thought about it. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't know different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was the worship pastor that we hired that looked at our space and said, well, we could do this. Why don't we do this? And we thought, why don't we do that? I mean, we've been staring at it for years, and then we did it. And so, So
it took fresh eyes.
Yeah, it takes fresh eyes. And so I think, you know, longevity comes with that. You have to force yourself to have new eyes. You have to force yourself to ask tough questions of people who are newer in the church or in the ministry, and you have to go to conferences and you have to network with other people to say, like, hey, because it's natural human nature just falls into a pattern. I know how to do this, and I'm just going to keep doing it this way because it's easy to do it this way. This is the way I've always been doing it. Where if there's a better way, well, that's going to be more work, and then you got to cast a vision, and you got to change thing, and it's hard. But if it's right, then it's worth it. You got to keep, you know, when you have longevity, you have to force yourself into those lanes.
Yeah. Try to recreate yourself every now and then. You know, start a podcast or something like that.
Yeah, that's it. Well, don't do that. We already have one of those.
Shave your head and pierce your ear.
Yeah, you can do that. You can shave your head, go on sabbatical, come back with a shaved head and a pierced ear. Hashtag Paul Abbott.
Because I assume a lot of these people listening are youth pastors, youth workers. If you have an issue with the senior pastor, come talk to me. I think as long as I know you're with me and not against me, I can hear almost anything.
Yes.
I said in a sermon last week, begin with a compliment, end with a compliment, point out my fault in the middle. Just try to be
good
nice.
Good plan.
You know, begin with a compliment, end with a compliment, and then say, you know what, I feel like you don't have my back. Or I feel like, you know what, when you got up and you said something, your message that came across, you know, just be honest, you know, and don't let it fester.
Yep.
Yeah, thanks. Well, we just want to thank you guys for being on the show today, giving us some time out of your day off, which we really appreciate because we know you need your day off. But we also just want to thank you for being great bosses and great leaders and great friends and tremendous supporters of youth ministry for all these years that have allowed us to stick around and still be here.
I was going to say, we talk often on this podcast about the benefits of longevity, but one of the reasons we're in it as long as we are is because of you two.
So, I appreciate that.
Cool.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
That's it for today. So we'll be back next week with episode 48. In the meantime, catch up with us on Instagram and Facebook. And if you haven't yet, go on out to iTunes. Give us a 5-star review and say nice things about us. We'd really appreciate that.
You probably want to share this with some senior pastors in your life. Maybe this is a way to speak into their life without quite directly speaking into their life. So
Yes. You
might be able to start a conversation with your senior pastor, maybe sit down and listen to us together.
Absolutely. But for now, Sherpas out.